This is fun! The FU Network!
Hello, I'm Stephen Kersner, and welcome to the Kersner Expedition. There's an aphorism that says it's better to be respected than to be liked, and better to be feared than respected. That's usually applied to people in power positions, elected leaders and despots alike. So it made a perverse kind of sense in 2015, when terrorists attacked France, they didn't go after the TV news or print outlets, but a satire magazine. And here's why. The regular condemnations that terrorists get from traditional news sources helps the terrorists towards their goal, increasing terror. It makes them seem more frightening and more powerful, and that's what they want. So instead, the terrorists went after a comedy source, because nothing reduces fear like comedy. It cuts the powerful down to size, and once a scary or powerful figure has been the subject of effective comic mockery, they can never be seen as scary or powerful again. Comedy robs them of their power, which makes comedy one of the most important forces in fighting fear that terrorists inspire and in bringing the mighty in our society, politicians, big business, newsmakers, to heel. So it's a tremendous power and a tremendous responsibility, political satire. And in Canada, we have a very strong TV program that's been going since 1993. Originally, this hour is 22 minutes, now just called 22 Minutes. My guest today, Mark Critch, started as a writer and since 2013 has been a regular on camera as well. Thanks for joining us, Mark. Are you out in Halifax right now?
No, I'm back home in St. John's, Newfoundland. We just finished our first half of our season. We start up again in January. So we have a little time off of 22 and time to get home and work on a couple other things. But so great to be back in Newfoundland.
Okay. So let's talk about political comedy in Canada specifically. Because it seems to me, and would you agree, that if you compare the United States and Canada, the political comedy, the political satire in Canada is of a kinder, gentler brand than what we see from U.S. comedians. Is that so?
People often say that, and I don't know, really. You know, I mean, first of all, the big difference, of course, is population. And there's a way, the media there is so much bigger, and there's so many different voices. And but here, I think we've had a bit gentler, but I can't see any other place where, like a show like ours, when somebody walks up, when Mary Walsh would walk up to Ralph Klein or Mike Harris and start telling them off, waving a sword around, and then that image will be picked up by all the newspapers and be on the nightly news and stuff. It's doing something right to somebody's face. I don't know if that's kinder or gentler probably than somebody writing a snarky column or something like that.
You know? Or a funny late night jab.
It's a different thing. And it is as a whole, I guess, gentler, but I think you get more bang for your buck sometimes with satire here in Canada because the access is so much better and there's a better chance because of the size of our media and the size of our population, there's a better chance that the person you're talking about hears you. And so I think it can be more effective that way.
I guess I was referring to that at times the comedy, the political comedy from the United States has a meaner edge to it than we have here in Canada. And I noticed that, especially on 22 Minutes, when you approach the politicians, when you hit them with the comedy bombs, the truth bombs, with comedy shells, they seem to take it in stride a little bit better. They seem to understand this is part of the responsibility of being a leader in this country and putting your face out there for criticism. Part of that is being exposed to political comedy, to being mocked, to being satirized, and they understand it's part of the process. And so there doesn't seem to be a adversarial relationship between politicians and political satirists in the same way. Do you agree with that?
But it depends. Like, they'll always seek out the spotlight a lot of times. I mean, you look at, like, you know, all politicians will go on Letterman and all politicians would go on Saturday Night Live. They go that way a bit in the States as well. But I mean, the other side of that is in Canada, when I was starting out on the show, people have gotten so used to 22 minutes over the years in politics. So especially younger politicians expect, like they don't know that you don't have to do it. You know, they kind of expect to do it. But I mean, I've chased politicians down hallways. I've gotten Mounties stop me from interviewing people. One of our reporters, Jerry Hall, was trying to interview Stephen Harper, stood up at a press conference. She was arrested, put in handcuffs by the RCMP. So, you know, and I mean, I've been pushed back by people, especially when Harper was around. They didn't want anything to do with it. So it comes down to, I mean, I can't think of anybody in the States has been put in handcuffs for asking a question or telling a joke. So it works both ways. But, it depends on the person, right? Stephen Harper didn't want to do the show once he got in, before he did. Trudeau doesn't mind it. So it's, and that works with, like, Peter McKay had no problem doing the show, whereas there's, you know, some liberals who didn't want to do it. So it really comes down to the person. I think the smart person will stand there and take it, and the smart person will, you know, not try and be too funny either while they're there, because they realize, you know, that it's also a huge platform. You know, more people watch our show than watch The National. So if they, especially during an election or something, if they can get on there, if they can come off looking halfway decent, that, you know, they've done a good job of getting, you know, some of their message across as well. So it's double-edged. I mean, it can work for them or against them, really.
I think that in Canada, we tend to value humility in our political leaders very strongly. I don't want to keep comparing to the United States, so I'll put that aside. But in Canada, Canadians like politicians who are able to laugh at themselves and suspicious of politicians who aren't able to, because it was like how George W. Bush got reelected. He was the candidate that people would most like to have a beer with. In Canada, we like our political leaders to be able to be not so brittle that they can't take some ribbing, because it shows that there's a timber to them. There's a strength and there's a sense of humor. And I've always said that, you know, you've gone too far. You know, you've radicalized yourself. You know that you're taking things too seriously when you've lost your sense of humor, because there's a short distance between a loss of sense of humor and a loss of sanity and a loss of perspective. Now, during the most recent election, I was fortunate enough to be backstage while you guys were shooting your show on election evening. And you ran a segment where you and Justin Trudeau were leaning up against some beer barrels. I don't know exactly what the location was, but you were peppering him with some stuff that touched some tender spots that had been exploited during the election. There was a look on his face where I wasn't sure, and I know Justin Trudeau. I don't know him to call him my friend, but I know him to be a human being. And I couldn't read on his face whether he was like, well, this is just what I have to do. I got to put myself in the stocks and let them throw tomatoes, or whether he was enjoying it, or whether he really, really, really wasn't enjoying it. So when you're facing a politician and you're getting perhaps an uncertain vibe from them based on your content, does that affect how you go forward with what you have planned for the bit?
Yeah, generally what I'll try to do is you prepare yourself with a bunch of questions or jokes you want to get into. But generally, that one wasn't a good example of this, because he didn't really say anything. I just kind of peppered him with a bunch of stuff because we didn't have very much time at all. Normally, I'll try and get them talking. The style of the show was always to kind of, like Mary Walsh or someone would link in with someone and kind of do a monologue with them there. But then my style was always more, except for that one time, actually, it was to have a conversation with them. And the great thing is listening and see where they go, where they're comfortable with, and being in the moment. And then that's when always the best stuff always comes out. Well, you can tell, certainly, it depends on the situation. Some people are more open to it and they'll sit down and talk to you. Other people are trying to get away, especially in the early days of the show that I was doing it. People would always try and run away from you or get away, and you knew they didn't want to talk to you. But there are times when you'll say something, or, you know, a couple of times I think I've gone a bit too far in trying to kind of get someone. And then that could be, and just because they get upset or want to end it or whatever, sometimes you yourself can go a bit too far too. You know, you have to remember people are people. And I've seen things fall apart for a number of reasons, but oftentimes, you know, I mean, Stephen Harper, again, I keep going back to him, but he really didn't want to do it, you know?
Well, he didn't seem like a guy who had a tremendous sense of humor. I couldn't see him at Christmas time regaling his children with big Burl Ives style stories around the fireplace.
The funny thing is, he is one of the funniest people we've ever had in office, because he's an incredible impressionist. He does a great impression. He's very funny. He's very quick with it. But he didn't show that side when he was prime minister. And I interviewed him a couple of times before he was prime minister, when he just got up on the Hill. He would seek us out and try and get on the show. And we'd never really use it because he was this guy, you know, it didn't have a huge presence. But then once he became prime minister, he didn't want to do everything. He did not want to take any chances, you know. And I don't think he's no fan of CBC, though, and especially. But he really didn't want to take any chances. And yeah. And so he stopped being funny. He stopped doing jokes. But occasionally, there is a tape of him, I think it might be on YouTube, where they left the camera on when he was doing a sound check, and he ran through a bunch of impressions. And then you'll see what the real guy is like. The real guy is actually, strangely, quite funny. And had he used that, I think he would have opened himself up to a lot more people in the middle, because, you know, people love humor. Kretschmann really used his humor to his advantage.
I remember, speaking of Chrétien, this is going back to Rock the Vote in the early 2000s. I accompanied Ed the Sock to Parliament Hill, and we were just outside the chamber, and out of the blue, Jean Chrétien walks past us and comes back out and says to Ed, "Hey, you can't smoke in here." And that was such a humanizing moment, because I was not politically supportive of him at that time, you know, personally, but I thought, what a human moment. And it showed that the guy knows how to, in addition to how to take down home invaders, he knows how to engage with humor. And there's nothing more humanizing than humor. And I think that if we had seen Stephen Harper as a latter-day Rich Little, perhaps there would have been fewer memes of him eating kittens.
Well, that's the thing, you know. It's like, the one thing I've learned over the years doing this and meeting so many politicians and getting to know some of them, because just even, you know, you might agree or disagree with something politically, but when you've been on the air as long as we have, and a lot of these faces have been there for a long time, you do get to know people a little bit. And really, you know, people are people. Like, I would always get, I'd always be, you know, when I was starting out, kind of nervous going up to somebody, especially if it wasn't, you know, set up. I'd go up and start trying to be funny or yelling or making fun of someone. And you'd be a bit nervous going in that, going like, what am I doing? I'm up here on Parliament Hill. Prime Minister is over there. I'm pushing past boundaries, yelling. You know, it could be stressful. But then you see on their faces, well, they're going like, oh, Jesus, is this guy going to get me on something? Well, they're worried too. And, you know, it's I can find humor can be, you know, it's quite humanizing in that you enjoy the part, you like the person more if they're being funny. But all those moments, I kind of realized, oh, it's like they're more afraid of me than I am of them. Oh, okay, I get this now, you know. And I would start to feel bad for people sometimes, you know, especially if they were if they were really on the hot seat. Other times, you know, I remember John Baird, I went up to interview, I was interviewing a bunch of people, and he was there. He took off running down a hallway, and it was locked at the end of the hallway. And he's like, well, turn off the camera and I'll come out. And I'm like, no, look, you've done this to yourself now. This looks terrible.
He didn't by any chance lock himself in a closet at that point, did he?
No, that was some. That's
another story altogether. Do you feel, you heard my preamble before we started speaking. Do you ever feel, first of all, do you agree that comedy, well used in a democratic society, is perhaps one of the most powerful tools for keeping people informed and engaged and keeping the powerful down to earth?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if when it's used right, you know, it certainly can. And the great thing is, you know, like I like doing monologues on the show where we just, I just did one on the show about MP salaries, you know, and it's, you can get a bunch of jokes out there, but you're also informing people. And I always get a kick out of doing a piece that gets laughs, but you can also see the audience going, oh yeah, oh, I didn't know that, you know, or, oh wow. You know, and that's a great way, you know, a little sugar. More people get their you know, their some of their news at least in that way. They learn stuff from late night talk shows or from people like us or what have you. And especially now with the internet, you know, it's really spread around all over on Facebook and stuff. So yeah, and what you're doing then, it's easy to be partisan and to online and for people to just share the memes and jokes that support their point of view. But if in doing something in a funny way, you can make somebody look at a topic or a person in a different way than they had before, somebody who really wasn't even thinking of that issue at all, then that's a great thing.
Okay. Now, you, like any other human being, have a political opinion, have a political bent. You vote, I assume, and you have your sense of values and which party most aligns to that. Do you ever, when you're approaching the leader of a party that you support or a leader that you hope gets elected, and you know that what you're about to unleash might affect votes, might affect this person actually taking office, do you ever feel a hesitation in doing that? Do you ever feel any regret afterwards that, boy, I might have contributed to chipping away at this person's support?
Not really, because I think it depends on what, you know, what they're doing at the time. You have to go for what's funny. What you have to, if somebody's really screwed up, I mean, look at Justin, you know, he's been on the show a million times, know him a bit, the blackface thing. I remember when I found out about that, I was like, oh my God, I don't know if he could survive this. And just because in that moment, and it's like, there's more coming out. And at that point, when it seemed like it was endless, when this was like, you know, before we knew that was kind of the end of it. And it's just like, oh Jesus, what's going to come out tomorrow? But you had to certainly go for it, you know? If anything, it makes me want to go for it harder, because you realize, you know, Ezra Levant and people on Rebel News might be saying, oh yeah, they'll often tweet at me and go, how come you're not joking about this? And I'll send them a link to something I've done where I have joked about it. And then they'll always be, yeah, well, you didn't joke about this topic. And then I'll send them a link to that one too, because they're only, you know, supporting the fact. So it's like, you really, if anything, it makes me go at them harder, because you don't want to seem like there's any kind of a bias or something.
It's interesting. First of all, when you're referring to your interactions with Ezra Levant, are you familiar with the term screaming into the void?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I know that, but I kind of like, and I know what he's doing. I always think of Ezra as a bad wrestler, you know? Like, he's doing a lot of, I think Ezra right. does a lot of what he does for booze, you know?
Yeah.
But I always try and answer people back, even if it's, I know I'm going, oh, here I go. But if somebody especially accuses me of being biased or something like that, he always calls me a government comedian, and then I'll give him a few shots back. But also, you know, you get into that, but at the end of the day, we kind of like go like, oh yeah, anyway, good luck, see ya. It's kind of like, you gotta leave it at that place of, you know, we each have our roles, whatever they are, and I don't, you know, hate anyone. So, so if anything, it makes me more diligent in trying to go after somebody if they've done something, if I think I might be aligned with them, to try, because you are aware of that. But at the end of the day, I think funny wins, and you have to try and spread it around as much as you can. And you know, and now of course, somebody, whoever's in power, is always going to be the person that you probably have the most criticism of, because they're the ones actually doing something. But then you might get into some kind of thing of like social policies, like in the conservative big discussion now, is about one of the big discussions is about, you know, political preferences of politicians, you know, or religious rather preferences, personal feelings, personal beliefs of politicians, which we've never really gotten into that much before, you know, with Andrew Scheer and his non-admittal of what he thinks about same-sex marriage and stuff. And I was I've talked to him about that on the show. And then I put the same questions to Jagmeet Singh this week on the show. So it, when these topics come up, you kind of have to ask everyone, or else, you know, people will try. Cause you're not, you know, I'm not running for anything, you know. So I try and spread it around.
Okay, and you know, just as a side comment, isn't it interesting that maybe you found the same thing? The people on social media, the loudest, claiming the CBC is biased and doesn't criticize Justin Trudeau, for example, or doesn't cover certain stories, are the people who haven't watched CBC in probably 25, 30 years because CBC is biased. So they have no idea whatsoever whether what they're saying is true or not. It's almost like the snake eating its tail, Ouroboros. Why don't you watch CBC News? Because it's biased. Well, how do you know it's biased if you don't watch it? Well, I don't watch it because it's biased. I've had these conversations on social media, and, you know, people are going to have their perspectives, and some people, no matter how much you satirize a certain politician, it's never going to be enough for them. But you mentioned earlier about going too far, where sometimes you'll be doing a bit and you'll think you've gone too far. Tell me about how you feel when that's happening, and then afterwards, when you're watching the footage, and that's when it hits you that maybe you went too far.
Yeah, sometimes you just try to do something, and in doing so, it has to have some kind of comedic element to it. You know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And sometimes, if you're trying to hit something over the head, for go like have a big aha moment or a gotcha moment. Sometimes for me in doing that in the past, trying to do it, it just comes across as maybe unfair, or sometimes you just lose track of trying to be funny. That's happened to me in the past. Sometimes things happen accidentally. Like Carolyn Parrish was a MP in the Martin government, and she had said that George Bush was a moron, and that Americans were a bunch of bastards and stuff that had been picked up on tape in the scrums, and it become a bit of an international incident. And then I went and interviewed her, and I brought along a George Bush doll to ask her to, you know, to try and, it was just a prop I was using for one of the bits talking to her about George Bush. Anyway, she took it during the, when we were filming, dropped it and stepped on it. And then when we were feeding the footage from wherever we were interviewing her, up through CBC, main CBC, some people in news saw the footage, took it, and aired it on the news before it had even gotten back to the CBC building that we shoot our stuff in.
Wow.
And then I got off, I'm coming back from that, and Don Newman, who was on then, I was on the news saying, that Parrish the Thought, Carolyn Parrish, is seen here stepping on a George Bush doll and with Mark Rich. And what does this mean for her future? I was like, and then the people were saying like, oh, well, yeah, he has to boot her out. He has to boot her out now. She has to step down, all this stuff. And then it was on led the National that night. It was the front page of the Globe and Mail, the National Post. And it was like one of these things where it's like, oh, boy. And she was booted out. And it was like one of these things where it's like, oh, boy, okay. It's kind of great for the show or something about this moment. But, you know, the human side of that, you certainly feel bad in the aftermath.
Wait, why do you feel bad? You know, what you did was, all you did was provide the rope. She made the noose and stuck her head through it. And I think that whole story underlines the point I was making, which is that we see a practiced, polished version of politicians in scrums and in the House during question period, and during their scheduled appearances. What happened with you and Carolyn Parrish was we got to see who she was, you know, her sense of humor and so on. And while I...
Well, not really. My issue with that was it was taken out of context of the bit. So I hadn't even edited the bit yet. Like, they took the raw footage and put it on the news.
Yeah.
And they don't see any of the context of what we're talking about, or all they see is her taking a George Bush doll, making it more of a political statement than if in the overall piece, when it's aired, it's a different thing. You know what I mean?
Did that make you angry that it was misrepresenting your piece?
Oh, God, I was pissed off at them. Yeah, you know. And plus, like, all the air had gone out of it before our show even got to it, you know. You know, and other times, you know, lots of stuff has happened over the years. But that's just the way it goes. You know, sometimes these things take a life of their own. They become big headline things, and people are mad at you from all sides. And you go, oh, boy, here we go. And, you know, it's changed a lot now with social media, though, where different camps will take something and hop on it. And you know, a few times people have been like, you know, oh, that guy's going to get off the CBC. He's gone too far this time or something like that. And
no, that was Don Cherry. You know, that was Don Cherry. That wasn't you.
But you realize, like, you know, that then you start to realize who the people are who are complaining and stuff. Like, I'll see on our Facebook page for 22 minutes, and there are all these accounts that'll complain. You put up a parody of a Canadian Tire ad, and the comments will be, oh, Justin Trudeau's government comedians, defund the CBC, and all this stuff. I was like, why did you sign up to our Facebook group? Like, why are you doing this? So,
also,
like,
what does that have to do with the what does that have to do with a review of the bit? Is the other thing.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing. It's just these trolls now who are, and bots and all this stuff who are out there to stir up a bit of trouble or what have you. But you see them in election cycles. You can see all these comments really pop up in election cycles, and you realize the Twitter farms and the bots and all this stuff. And then look and the 6 followers and a monkey or something for a face, and you realize, oh, so that's new. I've gotten to know the bots now. Like, I'm like, oh, that guy, I know who he is. So, like, that's a new thing.
Has that changed your approach to, because you were a writer before you were a writer and performer, has this new culture that we're in, this culture war, this identity politics thing, this, sorry, you're with us or you're against us, has that affected your writing at all, even in the subconscious? Has it made you hesitate in places? Has it made you go, you know, I'm going full bore? Has it affected you at all, this change in our culture?
I haven't felt it as I mean, you're aware of it, especially when, you know, when these big moments happen, you're aware of it. And like even like Don Cherry being fired, right? So it's like I did a sketch on that, but you know, so I purposely don't care about, or I'm not worried about people being overly outraged about stuff, because online, and because what I've realized is that a lot of the social media messaging, a lot of the Facebook comments and the tweets and stuff like that for people who get angry about these sketches or something sometimes, it's self-amplification. It's not your average people. It's not real people out there, because sometimes I'll get bogged down in a lot of the social media stuff, and you might get, it gets in your head, and you'll be trying to answer somebody back and be witty or defend yourself on something like that. And then you walk down, you know, Water Street here in St. John's, nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. You know, some of this stuff is so confined and smaller. But on the bigger issues, I mean, you know, being, you know, these moments where I find a lot of comics will say, like, you know, oh, you can't say anything anymore without offending people. Oh, this is crazy. It's and stuff. And I understand some of the point with the free speech. But for me, thinking twice about saying something has never made what I said worse. Or if there's a certain word in there, and if I think about it and change it to a different word, it's never really made it worse, unless the joke was pretty weak to begin with, in my experience. So I don't really, it doesn't kill me to have a second moment to look at something I'm preparing to say. Now, sometimes, of course, when you're making jokes and you're just talking as we are now or something, you might say something that could be taken a different way, or might not realize it, or maybe you'd like to have time to go back and reword it or something like that. And that could be the end of you. I think a lot of comedians down the road, yes. maybe, and politics. Yeah. That will be the end of us, is just riffing in a moment. But for them, being more aware of everyone in the room, being more aware of sensitivity some people may or may not have or whatever, having a more diverse, inclusive writer's room on the show, making you think about different things you maybe hadn't even considered before. I've never found that to weaken me or make it worse, because I think anytime you take a moment to think, now not saying something because you're afraid of somebody, how somebody might take it, or, well, if I say this now, people are going to be upset. That's a different thing, right? That's kind of maybe chickening out on something. Having a moment of, as our Senate would call it, sober second thought, if there's time for that, I don't feel that weakens things at all. If anything, it can make it better, but it's just, you have to make the right calls, and you also have to let not that be a muzzle to you, or make you afraid to say things.
Do you realize how, I mean, those of us who do political satire and get in people's faces, and we do it because I think ultimately we want laughs, but ultimately we want to expose truth. Do you realize how important the work that political satirists do is? Do you realize the value when you're doing it? Or do you just think, I'm out here doing the video equivalent of shit posting on the internet?
It's lots of times there'll be an issue or a topic or something that I feel quite passionately about. And I think, using comedy is my tool to get it out there, to get it discussed, to get, and especially to let more people know about something, because people on the left are going to talk to people on the left online. People on the right are going to talk only to people on the right online, unless they're saying that the other person is an idiot. There's no other real conversation that happens online with all this political stuff back and forth that I can see, for the most part. So if you can get it out to the average people in the middle who are not a staunch member of any party or who are not angry all the time, if you can get these things out there, then they might, I think Jason Kenney is a, what I call him, an oil and gas lighting Alberta. I did a monologue on him, got a bunch of shares online, a bunch of things about him and that issue that people hadn't probably seen unless we're doing deep dives on a lot of the political stuff. And for me, that's the best tool I have, is to get something out, get it shared, get more people thinking about it, and make my points. And if they come away with it with a different point of view, that guy's full of crap, or hey, I looked into this and I disagree, fine. As long as you're thinking about it and as long as you know what's going on, because a lot of people don't, and a lot
it's
of
a
people
good,
don't.
It's a good point.
Canadian politics. A lot of people don't follow Canadian politics in Canada.
Up till recently, it was boring. I mean, let's face it, up till recently, it was kind of a snoozer. And I think Canadians would like it to go back to that, quite frankly. Yeah. I think we'd like a nap.
This election was great. And that's the thing with the show, too. People are like, how does it keep reinventing itself every so many years? And it's like, well, Jesus Christ, when I started, if you told me that Donald Trump was going to be president and Justin Trudeau was going to be prime minister, it's just you cannot see what's coming. It's never tiring. It's never boring. And it's been amazing to be along for so long and to watch this in this bizarre ride that is happening. It's really something else. The way we do the show has changed so much. I mean, when I started, I would read the newspaper. We didn't have internet in the writer's room, and I'd cut clippings out of the newspaper. My dad was a news reporter, and he would do that during the week, cut things out of the paper and keep them in files, so that if the minister of something or other came out and he was doing something, you'd think, oh, wait a minute, that's not what he said a year ago. And you flip through your little file on him and hope you had a good quote. I was doing that. I used to do that in the writer's room like that. And now I see new writers come in. It's like, oh, who is Jason Kenney? Google everything about him. And I go, but the interesting thing about the old way is you really had to pay attention, and it helped you form opinions, and it helped you have something to say.
And it kept it present in your mind. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I find too, and maybe with a lot of people who are doing political comedy now, is maybe they're just, it's very reactionary to a headline and they're trying to say the funniest thing fastest. And I think political commentary and satire works on kind of those, some of those higher levels that you were talking about when you actually have something to say.
Well, and, you know, there's that old statement that, there's that old statement, satire is what closes on Saturday night on Broadway, because most of it goes over people's heads. People think you're, because satire is delivered straight most often. And so people have to be aware of the fact that you're making, that this is humor. And I know you have a limited amount of time. I just got a couple more questions. Because at one point, there was a survey in the United States, and most Americans got their news from Jon Stewart's Daily Show. And some people were alarmed by that. Certainly nobody more so than Jon Stewart. But I think, and tell me if you agree, that comedy allows a context to be given to an issue in a way that doesn't provide, it doesn't throw up barriers of jargon and political speak. It allows people to look at issues and contextualize them in a different way. And the humor allows, it's a softer delivery. And so they may question some preconceived notions more because of the presentation through satire and through comedy than if it was just straight news.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's, you know, well, first of all, people watch a show. People watch our show because, like, okay, it's the comedy show is some Canadian. So there's people in the house, maybe who, somebody who watches it for like Canadian Tire parodies.
I love those, by the way.
There's somebody who watches it for Kathy's Mrs. Enid monologues or something. And maybe there's somebody who watches it for me interviewing a politician or something. But the thing is, you get those people there, and they're, a lot of people are just, they're not there necessarily for the political aspect of the show. They're there for some laughter. So you can get it out to people who aren't even thinking about it, and you make them think about these issues or hear about these issues. And then in a little sketch, we just did a sketch last week about, it was on air yesterday, about Alberta and Quebec separation. So we looked at Alberta and Quebec as a couple, separating and fighting over things, and it for the audience really got really enjoyed it, because in that sketch and in that presentation with this couple arguing about, you know, wanting to separate, you can get in all the different things from the news story in there, but in a different way, and it kind of humanizes it, and people laughed. But on the way home, they'll go, "Oh, geez, I didn't know that about that. Does that seem fair to you?" And some of the discussions people have afterwards, I often get young people coming up to me and they say, people who are now studying politics in school. And I've even had MPs come up to me and say, I got interested in politics by watching my show when I was from 12 and up with my parents. And we would watch your show and we talk about stuff afterwards. And that makes me pretty excited. And then I would often get new Canadians stop me and say, when I came to this country, I would watch 22 Minutes because it was kind of a bit of Canadiana pop culture, and you'd see who the politicians were on there. And I found that it was a good way for me to understand a bit more about Canada. And those two things, I think, are the great, you know, two of the great legacies of the show.
Well, I mean, comedy like you do, it's, I call it a wolf in sheep's clothing. Because it seems benign on the outside, but underneath it, there's a bite. And
yeah, well,
you know,
yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Yeah, and that is the way, you know. And I don't try to be, you know, a vicious kind of out there kind of go get 'em kind of person. But you know, I'll sit there. I do have people sometimes will say to me that, like, you know, you can say something to somebody and insult them, and you have a way of doing it where they don't seem insulted, and they'll stand there and not quite realize what you said to them. And it's kind of like, well, that's kind of like what I try to do, you know, is get in there, keep them there for the whole time, have them want to do it again or be willing to do it again. Now, I've had times twice the prime minister was really pissed off and didn't do the show for, you know, a year in his when he was there, like once right before he became prime minister, he, because I pissed him off because I took a joint in his office, and he was mad and they wouldn't do the show, and I had to go ambush him to get him on the show again, and then gonna realize, okay, I'm mad for nothing, and then he would do the show again. And then another time I was trying to be a bit too edgy or try and get you or something. It was after the after all that stuff on the Aga Khan and this helicopter and everything, and so the people of Canada would know where it is. I tried to put a cat collar on him, and I got into this kind of like this argument pushing thing, and it just didn't work. And that's one bit we never aired, because we aired the first part of the interview, but the cat collar thing, he just didn't like it, and it got weird, and I was kind of pushing too hard. And then I went away, and my camera guy P is like, "Why were you trying to put a cat collar on the prime minister?" I'm like, "I don't know." It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah,
it seemed like it would work. And then they were like, "He's like, now they're not going to do the show for another year." I'm like, I know. So like, people often see the there's a lot that happens on behind the scenes afterwards with these people where it seems in the bit like they went along with it, but the second that the camera turns off, you'll get, staffers and people coming up to you, telling you off, freaking out about stuff. And, that's just part of the job that nobody sees, which is actually the more fun part. That's what I like. It's kind of like the get on a plane, track someone down, get an interview with them or ambush them or something. And then you frig off. Like recently we had Andrew Scheer on, and I wanted to get him on there talking about, I wanted to bring along a little gay pride parade to his rally so that he would have a pop-up gay pride parade, because he won't walk in the gay pride parades. So I go in, we show up at the rally. They're like, "Oh no, we told you we wouldn't do an interview." "Yeah, we're here now. What are you going to do?" "Okay, fine." They let you in. They're like, "Okay, well, we'll do something over here on the side." And a lot of people in the crowd started chanting out, a couple of people, the only two, started chanting out, "Don't listen to him. He's news. He's CBC." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I am. I'm actual fake news." And anyway, so he was kind enough to come over and do it. And then we had these couple of writers there in the crowd. They didn't know. And they ripped off their jackets and they like had shirts on. So like, "We're here. We're sheer. Get over it," and stuff. And it was a pop-up gay pride parade. So we finally would walk in one. And he didn't quite know what was going on. Then we're leaving. And the staffers were far enough away because of the crowd, they couldn't hear what was going on. So then they come over to me afterwards. "That seemed to go well. How was that? I saw a lot of people very excited." Like, "Oh yeah, they were so excited to see him. Look, we got to get going. Okay, bye."
And yeah, before you figure out what happened, we got to get going. Yeah. Many of the experiences.
Lots of times we run away giggling.
Yeah, many of the experiences you're describing, I can relate to. Over many years,
yeah,
managing
Ed
the Sock. Yeah, it's
and that's the fun of it, is running away giggling. And
well,
then,
and also realizing that they're not quite aware of what it is you've said that's funny. It's gone over their head, and you keep going, and they're not aware that they keep digging themselves in because you don't make it obvious. And then afterwards, it's just a funnier piece. In many ways, what you guys do and what I have done for many years, there's a similarity there, and trying to get the access is sort of the same thing, though I'd go places and politicians would pop up and say, "Will you let the Sock insult me?" It's like, "What?
Yeah.
Okay. What should I, now I got to think about who the hell you are and what to insult you about." But when you were doing the show for a long time and Canadian politics was a snooze fest, do you, when things happen like the blackface photo from the blackface video from Justin's high school days appear, do you do like your American counterparts rub your hands with glee that now we got material? Do you rub your hands with glee?
Sometimes it depends. It's like when the blackface thing happened, I was on a plane going to go interview Elizabeth May, who I could go door knocking with her for a piece. And I was writing sketches for that week's show on my computer. And my field producer, Corey Gibson, great guy, he comes up to me and says, "Do you have Wi-Fi on this flight?" I was like, "No, I didn't get it." He said, "Just get it." I said, "Why?" He goes, just get it. I get it. He goes, "Open any page." And I do. And I see it all. And I was like, "Oh my God, you know? And it's like, what the hell? And that was the only time I've actually been shocked in the whole run of everything, because a lot of crazy things have happened, Trump elected, etc. But this was, I was really stopped in my tracks. I was like, what is going to happen? Like, what's going to happen? And I thought too about, you know, I thought too about, you know, people of color and stuff in this country. And I thought, well, first thing I thought was like, what kind of a moment is this going to be for Canada? You know? We got to make fun of this. Okay. And I just deleted everything I'd been writing on the flight. I was like, I had two sketches going and I just deleted them both. Cause I was like, it's never getting in that. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just gone. It's like, that doesn't matter. Whatever stupid thing I was writing, I was like, break this. But it's. So at that moment I realized we had to write about it, but I was still, you still process moments too, you know, like you go like, huh, as a Canadian, you know, what's going to happen, especially with the election. And then it was like, okay, here we go. But then the same thing is like, okay, everybody stop for a second. How are we going to make fun of it? We had to make sure in making fun of this, we ourselves don't get in trouble, you know? So I thought, okay, well, Trent McClellan, he's our, one of our great cast members. He's a Black Canadian. So I thought right away, I think I wrote a little thing where we say, welcome 22 Minutes. I'm Mark Critch. I'm Kathy Jones. I'm Susan Kant. And I had Trent say, and I'm Justin Trudeau, because I saw having a Black man deliver that right away. Because people are going to be wondering, what are we thinking? What are we thinking? What are they going to say? And I was like, look, get rid of it. Pop that bubble the second you can. And then get into it. And then we just got into talking about it. You realize that, for the most part, though, you do rub your hands with glee. Sometimes you shake your head, though, with glee. You know, not with glee, but with confusion. Like, oh, my God, this now? Because I am always amazed that, you know, you would think if people say it's the same old stuff year after year. It's like, I'm always amazed that things can still top things, you know? You think, well, it can't get any crazier than Trump. Oh, justice in blackface? Oh, okay. And there's going to be something in a couple of years, you and I will be talking, and I'll say, remember when I said there can't be anything more than that? Then this has happened. And we can't even, it's like phones. It's like looking at a rotary dial phone and going, well, this is amazing. Like Alexander Bain Greenbelt thought, well, it can't get any better than this, you know? And we're having this podcast over the phone. So it's like that. But with stupidity. Stupidity,
you know,
in
what,
politics,
Mark?
Is
I hope,
the progression of phones.
I agree with what you're saying. I, however, hope that in a couple of years when we're talking, we don't have that moment where something has topped Donald Trump's antics in the White House and Justin Trudeau's high school blackface. I hope we don't have that conversation for the sake of humanity.
But we will. And we'll think, oh, well, this isn't so bad, I guess, after a little while, you know? And
well,
that's the great thing about it.
The frog in the boiling water, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. But the thing is with comedy, as you know, my friend, you can't write it. You know, the craziest things, the things that happen in life, you can't write it. And that's what's great about being on a satirical, like, timely show, where you finish the show that night, and then the next morning you have nothing for the next week's show, is every week I'm like, oh boy, we really need something. Oh, what's this say? And then there it is. So the world keeps on turning, man. The world keeps on turning.
Well, and I have to, you know, first of all, thank you, because for allowing me to accompany Ed on two Streeter segments on 22 Minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
you guys were great.
Well, thank you. And in both of those cases, I learned something that I was surprised in both cases. And so while I'm out there and Ed's doing his thing, talking to people and doing the comedy and, you know, so on, the responses of people, I actually learned something about the people I was talking to and perhaps a larger group that they perhaps represented and so on, and attitudes that I was really surprised about. I learned something just doing that. So I thank you. People are going to say, sure, Kirzner had Critch on just to you know, provide some fellatio because Ed the Sock was on 22 minutes. And you know what? They would have said that anyways. But that's not the point. The point is I appreciate having that opportunity because I'm, you know, back in the days, not the opportunity for the fellatio, but the opportunity for, you know, back in the day of Much Music, we'd open the window and out there talk to whoever was there. And this was very much like that. And it really gives you a sense. Nowadays, people are doing things, as you said, on the phone. People are doing things directly to their camera phone and putting it online, and not getting a sense of Canadians, of people, of the diversity, of the characters that are out there, of the range of opinions, and of the preconceived notions that we get in our heads without us even knowing they've gotten in there. And that was... those two experiences were enriching, and I hope that that translated, you know, to the audience as well. But people say, you know, you know, there you are ambushing, to use a term, a politician. So the politician is surprised, but at the same time, you can be surprised as well. You know, the ambushee and the ambusher can equally be surprised by what transpires. Thank you for that. Keep doing what you're doing with 22 minutes. Keep holding our politicians' feet to the fire. Keep using humor in the strongest way possible. Comedy is politics by other means. And sometimes it's the only way to get people to educate themselves without them even knowing it about issues that are important to them. So keep doing what you're doing, Mark. And thank you for spending the time with us from St. John's, Newfoundland.
Thank you, and keep doing what you do. The podcast is great, and really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me, and keep doing what you do. The country needs it.
All right, thank you very much. Mark Critch of 22 Minutes on CBC. You can see him Tuesdays at 8:30 Eastern time. Wherever you are in the country, you'll know what time that translates into. Mark, thank you. And please say hello to Corey Gibson, who you mentioned, and to the rest of the cast, Heidi and everybody else there. I had a great time interacting, and
I will
see you guys again. And you,
yeah, we'll see you for sure.
Okay, you guys have a good holiday break. I'm looking forward to part two of the season, because now we got a whole new parliament. You guys got new ministers. You guys, the new material is writing itself for you. All you've got to do is pluck it out of the air and put it through your heads right now. So,
amen to that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, buddy. We'll see you in Halifax and bring Ed along.
Listen, if I don't bring Ed along, what the hell do you want me there for? All right, talking to Mark Critch, I'm Stephen Kirzner on the Kirzner Expedition. If you've enjoyed this program, please help support us. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. And as I've learned on satellite radio, got to say it three times, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, or a one-time boost if you don't want to commit monthly. Go to PayPal. We're at funetworktv@gmail.com, funetworktv@gmail.com, funetworktv@gmail.com. I know it's annoying, but apparently it works. So thank you for your tolerance of that. Thank you for listening. And please tell other people about FU Politics and all the great series we have running under that umbrella. I'm Stephen Kirzner. Thank you for joining us. I don't have a good tagline, so... thank you and good night.
This is fun! The FU Network.